welcome to Pints with Treebeard. My name is Josh Edgren. I'm a pastor and teacher in Moscow, Idaho. And today I have the delight of being joined by Mr. Jameson Winter, one of the few men who knows the meaning of the phrase Vala Kasharla Tavuk Darum.
Man, what a throwback. Yes, I'm Jameson Winter, and I'm the dean of the upper school at Augustine School in Jackson, Tennessee, but that makes me wish that I lived in Istanbul. So last week, we already mentioned that this week we'd be talking about Christmas, and I was just curious where you wanted to start.
Yeah, so Christmas is the focus. Christmas is impossibly large. You could have an entire podcast devoted to, not like one episode, but like the whole thing being Christmas. There probably is. So the impossibility of doing anything like an exhaustive treatment of Christmas is freeing in some respects. Like, let's not even try. So I'd like to focus on kind of the character of the dad in Christmas. So there you are. You're in the Christmas celebration, and you're the dad. What should you be? What should you be striving to be? And so I've kind of got some broad headings, and then we can flesh it out and speak more concretely. So I encountered this a while back. I think it was Jesse Sumter who wrote an essay for the Fight Laugh Feast magazine on the image of, or the picture of God that we have in the sun. And I've loved it, and as a physics guy, I've kind of come back to it again and again. But he was orienting it particularly to the man, the father, at Christmas time. That, like God the Father, is this source of unending, infinite, abounding life, light, energy, just blasting in all directions, like the sun, not S-O-N, S-U-N, right? Just sends off into the darkness, into the void, light and life and joy and abundance. You know, so God is for creation. He's both, infinitely distant and unapproachable, and yet also immanent, right? He's both transcendent and immanent. He is generous to an absurd degree. I love thinking about how little of the sun's energy reaches Earth, right? If you think about how far away the sun is from the Earth and how small of a pie slice we take up in just the amount of energy the sun is radiating out, and then thinking about that in three dimensions, like the tiny, 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 tiny cone that of the sun's energy that we get on Earth, and yet how it is the source of pretty much all of our energy, right? In one way or another. So God is just abundantly, extravagantly generous, giving of himself for the sustenance of all things. And dads ought to be like that. Dads ought to be pictures of that for their children, for their wives, for their people, whoever God has given them to. And just like we see the generosity, the self-giving love of God most profoundly in the Christmas story, giving up himself, giving up his son, so we as dads ought to be that too. So we as dads ought to be even more extravagantly generous at Christmas time than at other times. That's right and fitting. So that's kind of the first heading. So what can this look like? I'll toss it to you. What do you think, sir?
Well, I think first as a starting point, it's just important to note that to be extravagantly generous beyond what's normal implies necessarily that you are normally generous and that your kids are used to seeing this. So the picture we don't want to paint is that you're a stingy curmudgeon most of the year, and then you happen to give your kids an extra slice of pie at Christmas, right? The picture of fatherhood, if we're going to emulate God the Father, is overabundant blessing and gift and love and affection. And it's particularly heightened. It's increased above an already high level at Christmas time, during the Christmas celebration. And so I think that's just something to keep in mind that can be convicting for us as dads when we're frankly wanting to be selfish with our time and our energy, or especially around a busy time. Like we just talked about last week, the busyness of Advent and all that goes into making that happen. And if you're exhausted coming into the Christmas celebration, like you might not feel like you have a lot left to give, but you need to. And it needs to be of a higher degree and a greater intensity. It's like the sun shining at noonday versus the morning and the sunrise, right? So I love the image because it's just what you said. It's self-giving. The sun gives us light and energy and joy and expects nothing in return, right? It doesn't, we can't give it anything. And like, what can you give the sun? Really? Oh, I see. What do you have to offer to that giant ball of flame in the sky that allows you to live? Nothing, right? And it's the same for God, right? He doesn't need things from us in that way. You can't pay God for his favor. And you can't pay him back for the sacrifice that he made in sending his son to die. And you're not supposed to. You're supposed to enjoy it and enjoy him. And in fact, that is what we give God, is our delight and enjoyment of him and the relationship that he has made us for by walking as his sons, his image bearers rightly. I mean, that's something that Athanasius talks about as I was reading, as I mentioned last week. He talks about the dilemma that God is in when the world falls, because on the one hand, he wants to be constant to his promise, and he said that death will come if you eat the fruit of the tree. On the other hand, he wants to be constant to his goodness, and he made the world good. And is he really going to let the deception of some lowly serpent totally undo all of his creation, causing it to go further and further into degradation? Well, no, of course not. That would be weakness to allow it to just go and decay and die. It's a showing of God's strength and his might that he sends Christ to die. So there's that aspect of it as well, that this is what God made us for. And really, that's the place I would start, is just the mindset as a father. This is what God gave you children for, is to have that same kind of mindset towards them. The mindset that says, I lavish goodness and joy on my wife and children, and I begrudge them none of it, and I don't lament the sacrifices that have to be made to make it happen. And in fact, I have a deeper joy in their enjoyment of the thing than in my keeping of what it would have, you know, what I would have kept, my time, my money, my energy, whatever. I would have enjoyed keeping that to myself. I enjoy far more their pleasure at my expense, right? And that's something that I don't know how to teach someone, and I don't know how to teach it to myself. I just know that it's true. I mean, it's the words of Jesus. It's better to give than to receive, right? And that's just fundamentally the way that God's made the world. And if you don't feel like that's true in the moment, then you're denying reality. You're not just, you know, arguing with God or even grumbling with yourself, trying to arrive at, okay, is this really a good sacrifice to make? You're arguing with the way that God made the world, which is that abundant blessing and gift that sacrifices towards others is a greater delight and enjoyment to us than to not give it, to keep for ourselves. So that's maybe not the practical kind of, you know, example that you might have been asking for, but I think it's an important realization for us as fathers, because we're so tempted not to do that. We're so tempted to keep our energy, keep our money, be very, very cautious with our giving and our lavishness. And we just can't be if we want to imitate God. And that's why he made us fathers, to imitate him as father.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And keying that off of how God made the world. And this is what is laid upon us. This is the work, the joy, the honor, it's the honor of self-sacrifice. It's the honor of dying, right? It's fathers have been given the privilege of being, you know, first into the breach, right? First off the siege tower, which is the guy who dies, all right? And but more than that, we've been given the honor of doing that every day, right? Of dying every day, of going and putting our bodies and our minds on the line in order to, you know, bless our wives and children. And I love what you brought out before, which is this shouldn't be different from how we normally are. It's just a heightened form of it, right? You know, we're operating at one level all the time, and this season is just a higher time. And yeah, you can be tempted to grumble about that. You can be tempted to grumble about having to lay down your life, about having everything feels like taken from you, right? My money, my time, my sleep, my house, right? It's all taken from me. You can grumble about that, but you're grumbling about glory. You're complaining about the crown. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, to use a masculine example that you actually alluded to be first into the breach or the first over the wall, this is actually something that the ancients had to do. And I'm sure other militaries have done it, you know, in more contemporary ways. But when you're sieging a city and you put ladders up against the walls, the guy who goes first is almost certainly dead, right? He might live, but there were particular honors that the Greeks and Romans and others would give to the one who was first over the wall and who died. Whether you die or live, but especially if you die, there are particular glories that you are promised. And at times, there are particular things promised to your family if you sacrifice, because they recognize somebody has to sacrifice, somebody has to go over first. And you're there with 40 enemies right around you within spitting distance, and they're all armed to the teeth and can't wait to kill you, right? But the men did that because they recognized it was a glory. It was an honor for their country, for their family, for their people. And we have the benefit of not physically dying every day. What it actually looks like is dying to sin, dying to our selfish desires every day. And we get the joy and the glory of that every day. And again, we just don't see it that way because we're selfish and we're self-centered. And we look at our own lives and our own, our own kind of wants and desires and think, but I want more for myself. And that's just not what God made us for. And if you don't believe it, if you have a hard time believing it, as we all do at times, just try it. Just live that way for a week. Live that way this Christmas, right? Commit to doing everything possible this December 25th for the sake of your wife and your kids, making every possible sacrifice that you see along the way and see the joy that comes from that. It's incredible. And it makes me want to do it more than I already do. Right? It makes me want to say to my sinful self, no, stop it. You're being weak. You're being cowardly. And you're storing up for yourself blame and fault and bitterness instead of joy and glory.
Right. Jumping off of that last bit, I like the way you reference the Greek and Roman soldiers and the honor that was heaped upon the guy first over the wall. Two things I love about that. One is that what then motivates the man is, in a sense, still he's still desiring something. In a sense, he's still desiring something for himself. He's desiring the glory. And he's saying, I want the glory more than I want my life now. And in a sense, we're in the same position, right? What I want, it's not that I'm laying down all my desires. It's that I'm desiring something bigger, something richer, something farther. Namely, well, to be like God, right? Which what bigger thing is there than that? And God is one who gives extravagantly of himself. So to be like God, I need to do the same. But then the other thing that I think the image of being first over the wall is helpful for, if it's me and I just happen to be the guy, or maybe I grudgingly say, like, yes, I will be at the top of the ladder, right? Here I go. I will take this. Like that's fine. That's good. That's good as far as it goes. But I'm gonna die, right? I'm gonna go up to the top, and there's gonna be somebody who hits me with a club, and I fall off and I die. But maybe the next guy gets over. Okay, but imagine if there's actually like eight of us all at the top of our ladders, and we're all looking at each other like, all right, it's gonna be one of us over the wall first. I bet it's gonna be me, right? And if this sort of like zeal and desire, and it's not like a crushing, like, I will bear this burden, but like, I'm coming, like, I'm going to be first. And that guy over there, he thinks he's going to be first. He's not going to be first. It's going to be me, right? Interestingly enough, that makes you more likely to survive, right? It's that zeal, that edge, that courage that's actually going to make you like, have this scary light in your eyes as you're climbing up, and the guy with the club on the top goes, you know what, maybe I'll be elsewhere, right? And then actually, you're more likely to make it with that sort of holy zeal. And I think that, not to be weird, but there's a sense in which there's sort of like a healthy camaraderie and almost a competition amongst dads. And I think there ought to be. Like, all right, we're all in this. We're all trying to lay down our lives to bless our families. Like, I'm doing it for the glory of my God and the good of my people. He's over there doing it for the glory of God and for the good of his people. Let's do it, right? And that's going to save you from the woe is me, I will shoulder this burden, right? Which is just a killjoy.
Yeah, and that's something that you should pick up from other dads, right? Like, you don't have to frame it as a competition, although you can, and there are good ways to do that. But like, look at something that another dad does for his wife or his kids and think, oh, I'm going to do that. And I'm going to try to do it better because he's given me the pattern and he made that up from nothing. And now I have the pattern so I can improve it and do it better. And not do it better to prove that I'm better than him, but do it better to be an even greater blessing to my family and to my God. And then somebody's going to see you do it and challenge them. Hey, you should do this. Do it better. Here are my plans, right? Like, here are the plans for my bunk bed. Go make one that's even greater for your kids, whatever it is, you know, like find practical ways to learn from others and be sharpened by them, right? Be sharpened by other men. And we don't think about this often, but the idea of sharpening, like iron sharpening iron, men sharpening one another. Have you ever sharpened a knife before? Like you take huge, not huge, but these, you know, big slivers of metal off the blade and you're literally making the blade smaller, but you're bringing it to a point and it's grating against it's painful. I mean, just listen to the sound. It's a terrible sound in your ears and yet it's making the knife more effective. And so it's just like paideia, all discipline is painful for the moment, but look at the fruit, right? Look at what it yields. And that's the other thing that I would say in a principled way is that we've mentioned you're doing, you know, in all aspects of fatherhood, you're doing these things for the family dinners 20 years from now, when your kids are back with grandkids and you want to be at peace with them and you want your soul to have rest at that point. And so what are you doing now to, as far as it depends on you, ensure that that happens? Again, obviously you don't provide the growth. God provides the growth, but what are you doing now to plant, to water, to weed the garden? And to get out there the next day when the kudzu's back, because by golly, it just won't go away, and pull it again. So maybe getting a little more practically, I'd be curious your thoughts on how you see that, maybe particular temptations around Christmas or particular ways that you try to serve your family. Maybe just a couple would be, one, trying to stay engaged the whole time, as engaged as the kids are, right? And to not just kind of be here for presents for 15 minutes and then, okay, I'm done. Like I'm tapping out. That was a very intense 15 minutes because it might've been, right? But to say your world today is made up of these three new books and this new set of blocks and these magnetiles, because that's what you got today. And you can't wait to play with them all day long. And sure, there'll be other times to play with them, but you're not thinking about that now. You're not thinking about the fact that you're going to play with these for the rest of your childhood. You're thinking about today, I'm going to squeeze every ounce of fun out of these toys and these books that I can. And that might look like reading a book five times to a kid on a Christmas morning, right? And we just have to be in for that, I think. There are times, obviously, to draw boundaries or to say, hey, we're actually going to do this thing as a family. We don't have time for that now. That's fine. But when you're able, and your kids are clearly wanting you to invest and to engage with them and what they're getting and celebrating, you got to do it, right? I have to tell myself, I have to do this, right? And it's fun if you approach it willingly, and it's drudgery if you approach it with frustration or consternation because you want to go and, I don't know, make something with your new power tool that you got or whatever, right? But there'll be a nap time. There'll be a time where the kids go to bed and you can play with your own toys then, right? You can get out in the shop or whatever it is that you do. Do that then. But focus on the kids while that time is there. I think that is utterly important and such a temptation to just kind of to do it all the way for like 20% of the time and then to peel way back and do it like 60% of the way for the rest of the time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that just kind of for simplicity's sake, I think there's three main areas where we ought to be generous and are tempted not to be. One is our money. Two is our time. And three, which you're getting at there, is our attention. And we're tempted to shirk all of those. So money is obvious, but money also depends upon how much money you have, right? But I will argue that, and we'll get into this later, but like this is actually the purpose of life. This celebrating before your God with your people is actually the end. It's not a means. This is an end and should be treated like an end. And so if you are spending more money, not more money than you have, but more money than seems right, surely we should be saving for something else. Like, don't be imprudent, but just this is actually an end sort of thing, not a means sort of thing. And so giving of your money extravagantly is fitting, is right. And I have the heart of a miser, and so I am preaching to myself, and I've been preaching it every year, and I just hope to have a Christmas that passes, and I don't say afterwards, golly, I was stingy. I was stingy, pointlessly stingy. I held back my money because I was afraid, or because I just thought it would be bad to spend more money. I had money, and I didn't give it. That was a failure. So money is variable because it depends on how much you have, right? Which we've talked about that before. But time isn't. You know, everyone has the same amount of time, 24 hours in a day. And sure, different work schedules allow for different time off and that sort of thing. So giving of your time, there's no substitute for it, right? Quality time doesn't happen without quantity time. there just has to be. Your children and your wife need your presence. You have to be there. But at the same time, I love how you brought that out. You can be there, but not there, right? And you can fail to give your attention. And you can be in the same room as your kid on your phone. You can be in the same room as your kid with your new book, right? And you know, yes, it's very nice. So giving an area where we must be generous is in our attention. Not only our present attention, but also our future attention, which means planning, right? And ordering of things. So attending not just like, I'm looking in your eyes, child, but I'm looking at the whole family and the future day. And also the week, because Christmas is more than a day. And, you know, I have given attention to all the various aspects of this thing. I've seen the trouble spots. I've seen the areas where we will need to tread carefully. I have prepared particular delights for us throughout this time. And so that means not only being present when you're present, but also being present in the past, right, for now. Right, so those I think are the areas, money, time, attention. Thoughts or additions there?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, drawing that all to a head and planning, I think, is so good because, as you mentioned a couple of weeks ago in the Thanksgiving episode and festivity, this is something that you can plan for financially by budgeting accordingly. And I actually, I love that. I think about that more in terms of kind of what money that we have am I going to set aside, you know, as a lump sum rather than budgeting monthly. But I actually want to try to start doing that monthly in smaller quantities that add up over time rather than saying, okay, here's where we stand. You know, this is what we have in the bank account, so to speak. And I say so to speak, I mean literally. And what portion of that am I comfortable saying, okay, this is what we're going to pull and use for Christmas, right? Rather than doing that, maybe do that in addition. If there's like some kind of, you give yourself a Christmas bonus, right? Like your family, a Christmas bonus from that. But maybe budget along the way, you know, $50, $25, whatever it is, $100, I don't know, whatever your means allow you to do. And so that's one way to plan, but I think it's so important, like you said, to plan the time, the experience, what we're doing, when we're doing it, how we're doing it. Again, that doesn't need to be this overly formulaic, like, here's your Christmas itinerary for the next 3 days, kids, and it's got every hour planned out. Like, that's crazy, and I would hate that as a kid. And maybe you do that, and your kids love that. And if so, Lord bless you. But that's not me, and that's not, I think, most people. We want there to be some informal nature to the holiday, but that doesn't mean chaotic or lack of structure, right? So planning things to do together and saying, okay, we've got some time for the new toys and new books and things like that, and now we've got some time to do this thing as a family. We're going to go out and do this, or we're going to do this at home, or we're going to set this time aside to go and visit these people who we love, whether that's, you know, grandparents, that's going to be that a lot of times, or even friends, close friends in the, you know, the same city, or whatever it is. But planning those things out carefully goes so far in helping everything run smoothly and helping it actually be a joy. Because if you, the alternative is you're always on the back foot. You're always having to step away and check on, oh, how much does this cost? Oh, when are they open? And could we get everybody ready in time? And well, it looks like 30 minutes is all the time we have. I don't think we can order tickets and get there in time, or whatever it is, right? You're always on the back foot, which leads to things just not happening. And it doesn't need to be, we're going to this, you know, $100 a ticket amusement park for Christmas, but doing something meaningful together to celebrate is important. And to do that, it needs to be planned. It needs to be then executed.
Going on, but also keying off of something that you brought out earlier, actually, this is a very potent time. It is a time with a great deal of nostalgia. It is a time with many of the best things in life, you know, the lights and the decorations and the rich food and the rich drink and the presents, and we're all the family time, etc. And so emotions run high, and there has been a move culturally to make emotional experience the be-all, end-all of the thing. That what is this for? Well, in the broader culture, the actual, quote, reason for the season has been removed, ignored, excised, and thus, what's the end? Well, the end must be me, and the end must be my own feelings. And so then you have this over-sentimentalization of all of it. And this is just something that should be avoided and pushed hard against in our own hearts and minds first and foremost. This is not the same thing as saying you're not allowed to have fun. It's not the same thing as saying you're not allowed to have your children have fun. It's not that at all. Emotions will come. It will hopefully be a delightful experience for everyone. But that can't be the driver, right? It will come, or it won't, but it's not driving. So getting it into the noggin of the dad, that this is actually a thing that we are doing that is objectively true. When we gather to sing carols, when we make the roast beast and with all the fixins, when we put a tree in our house and cover it with lights, this is not to make us feel good. This is something that is true. We're actually saying something that is true, and we're saying it to God, to one another, and to a dying world. And if it makes us feel good along the way, isn't that sweet? God is kind. But it would be right and good to do, regardless of how it makes us feel. This doesn't mean we run roughshod over everyone's feelings. It doesn't mean that you say, stop crying, Timmy, we're going caroling to another house. And I'm cold. Right? Not that. Obviously, normal charity is not off the table. But remembering that the point of all of this is not how it makes me feel and not how it makes my kids feel. Right? The point is not the warm fuzzies. The point is not when they look up at me with their eyes and go, oh, daddy, thank you. Right? And I go, that's not the point. The point is that God is good and we are to be like him. The point is that God gave his son for the salvation of the world. And that means that stuff is good and will be redeemed. It means that sins are forgiven. Like, all that is true. And we are participating in it and proclaiming it. That's the point.
This is maybe a good point to draw some lines between Christian celebration of Christmas and the culture's celebration of Christmas, which is actually often, sadly, how we celebrate as Christians too, which robs it of all of its potency, as you put it. Which is to say, kind of like we alluded to the movie Klaus last week, and there's this good story of, you know, good and evil and redemption and restoration and all of these things. When the world writes that story and just misses the mark in some fundamental ways, even though it's by and large excellent and telling a mostly true story, the reason they're missing the mark is because there's no objective truth in it. There's no grounding for what's happening in the story. And so it doesn't mean that celebrating is wrong. Like you said, it means that there needs to be a grounding for our celebration, which means that you might see something very similar in, say, a Christian family celebrating Christmas and a run-of-the-mill pagan family out there celebrating Christmas too. There might be the warm fuzzies. There might be the lavish gifts from the father. There might be the little kids with their hot cocoa reading a new book with dad, that sort of thing. The difference is not in what it looks like exclusively, although there might be some difference in that too. The difference is that you're using this as a means to exposit what God is like explicitly to your children. And the other dad is not. The other dad is enjoying the good gifts of God without giving him his due credit. And you and I must not do that. We must give God due credit and due honor and praise and extol his glory and his lavish kindness to us, even as we do the same for our kids. So it's always, like you said last week, it's expositing the signs and the symbols of the season to our kids, so that when you have a little kid sitting in your lap with this new book and they say, "Daddy, I love this book. This is so fun." You can use that as an opportunity to remind them of God's goodness. And that doesn't, you can also do that in kind of a humbug sort of way where every time they say thank you, you say, "But God is better than me." And like, okay, they get it, right? They're just saying thank you because they love you. So that we don't want to do that and just like beat them over the head with the meaning behind the symbols. But that's not our tendency. Our tendency is to not exposit the symbols at all. And then they just think, oh, it's a tree with lights and ornaments and presents and, you know, good turkey or ham or whatever you have for Christmas dinner. And that's the reason for the season. Thumbs up. Or even like, oh, we like are kind to other people and make sacrifices for them. And that's the reason for the season. Thumbs up. But that's not, right? The reason is God and imitating him and calling attention to his son and the salvation that Christ has wrought in the world.
There can be a temptation to emphasize only the warm, fuzzy parts. And one of the things that the book I recommended last time was God Rest You, Mary. And one of the chapters in that book talks about how there really should be Herod soldiers in nativity scenes. Like this, they're part of the story, actually. The slaughter of the innocents is part of the story. Because Christmas is not about cute manger scenes. Christmas is about the redemption of the world, and the world is bad and wicked and violent. And the coming of Christ came with blood and violence, actually. And it had, I preached a sermon one time where I emphasized, actually, you know who understood the Christmas story really well? Herod. Like, Herod got it. Like, Herod knew, like, oh, no, this is the end of my kingdom. Like, this is a threat. And he wasn't wrong. He was right. And we need to have that running in our minds while we're drinking the hot cocoa around the Christmas tree. Like, this is beautiful and lovely and a taste of heaven. But it's a taste of heaven in a very dark, cold, scary world. The celebration takes place at the winter solstice, at the darkest time. And if we forget that it's actually all about the redemption of the world and the taking the light and beauty and glory that our Christmas tree represents and spreading it everywhere. Like, that's what it's about. It's not about just us feeling cozy, but it's about conquest, right? It's about the devil being chained. It's about eventual judgment coming to all those who hate God. And that's not sentimental at all. And that's not about the warm fuzzies, but it's true.
Yeah, I can't remember if I ever posted this. I don't think I finished it, but I started writing back when we had the other blog, an article titled Christmastide as Conquest. And it's exactly that idea, right? That this is, for Christians, the celebration that Christ has come. He's king. He's reigning. He's making all things new. He is spreading his glory over the face of the earth through the church. And he's doing that because the world was held in captivity to sin and death and the false gods, right? And so he's bound the strong man. He's plundering his house. He's taking it from him by force. And just because we're on the winning side doesn't mean that's not happening, and doesn't mean we can stop acknowledging that there's a war going on. In fact, it would be a kind of grotesque profanity to remove the sort of conquest aspect from it, and to remove the fact that this is a proclamation of Christ's victory over the darkness. Because what that looks like is to say, oh, well, here I'm cozy with my hot cocoa and my warm blanket and my sweater, and my kids are all matching in their Christmas pajamas, and we're going to watch this movie, and isn't life so nice? When the reality is, we're celebrating that life is not nice, and that God saved us from it, and he's making it nice. He's making it glorious. But yeah, there's so much sacrifice, so much work that goes into that, that we're celebrating with Christmas, with the advent of our Savior and King. And we can't get away from that. We can't lose sight of that, because if we do, we're lying about what Christmas is.
Going on, another duty that the dad has, kind of the flip side of the generosity, he's playing the part of God in a sense, right? He's acting like his father, but the dad should never forget that he's also a son. And so that this is actually a time when we are not God. We are children of God. And as dads, we get to play that dual role. But we also need to remind our children how to be good receivers, how to receive with gratitude. So we ought to be extravagantly generous and also extravagantly grateful. And it should be this overflowing sense of God is so good, kids. Let me point you to the goodness of God. But this also means gratitude to relatives who give us good gifts, gratitude to our wives who give us good gifts, gratitude to our children when they get old enough to give us gifts. We should be modeling this joyful receptivity as well. And that's a part that we can miss. But it's a critical duty of the dad, because he's got to model gratitude for his children. They don't know what it looks like unless he shows them. And so this is part of his job, is to kind of play both parts, the giver and the receiver. But the temptation can be for dads to play God, and to play God so much so that they obscure the true God. For dads to turn into tyrants. Obey me, right? Obey me, for I am king. No. Obey me because God says so. Obey me because God is king, and he's given you to me, but eventually I'm going to get out of the way, and you're going to obey him directly, right? At Christmas time, we are extravagant givers, but we're not the source. We're a conduit. We're a conduit that God has chosen to use to bring good things to his children, and we need to make sure that we are, not that we get over ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, you can't teach your kids how generous God is if you're not also teaching them how grateful man should be. Those things have to go together. And it's something that you and I have talked about a long time ago. We were still in school at the time. Golly. That gratitude is hard to express, I think, particularly for men. And we just have to learn how to do it. You got to get over that. And you have to get over particularly the idea that on the one hand, you might not want to show emotion or great, excitement or something like that. Stop it. Be excited about something that's exciting. It should be exciting to you that your parents or your in-laws just gave you this lavish gift that you don't deserve and that no one else is getting for the holidays, right? Be grateful for it. Be over the moon about it. Lead your kids in celebrating it and running out and jumping on this new trampoline and laughing your head off together or whatever it is, right? Don't be such a kind of protector of your own dignity that you stop yourself from actually expressing the joy and the gratitude in your heart. But then on the other hand, this is what we were talking about particularly those years ago, which is that gratitude is hard in English. We have the words thank you, and that's it. And you don't need to say, you don't need to heap words upon words upon words, right? You don't need to keep saying it 17 times. And this actually happened yesterday at the dinner table where Ezra was saying, thank you for dinner, mama. Thank you, mama. Thank you, mama. Thank you, mama. Like 15 times in a row. And Levi said, mama, you have to say you're welcome all that, like all those times. And I said, well, actually she doesn't. That's not true. He just needed to say thank you once. You just say thank you. And that's all you can say. I mean, I guess you can say thank you very much, but that doesn't really mean anything. What you mean is thank you. Like, you've given me something that I can't pay you back for and I'm not expected to pay you back for. And so to try to pay it back in words is to kind of undercut the gift itself, which is, yeah, your in-laws know that you weren't expecting a trampoline and that this is an incredible gift. They're not expecting you to go on and on and on forever about this. They're expecting you to receive it with a grateful heart and to enjoy it. And so just guarding against both of those things, the kind of overly protective aspect of like, I want to be dignified and I'm the man and I don't shed tears and I don't show emotion or whatever. Like, we can default into that even when we mock that caricature as men. We're like, oh yeah, those dads that never cry, ha ha ha, and we wag our fingers and then we become that in the moment. And we're not very emotive and we don't celebrate with our kids and with our wives. But then the other side is, yeah, accept the fact that this is a gift and you have to just say thank you. And that expresses a kind of humility that doesn't come across when you're trying to qualify the Thanksgiving and magnify it again and again.
Yeah, that's right. The humility aspect and the not taking oneself and one's dignity too seriously is right. So we have to remember that we are creatures before our God and that we have to tell the truth about the world. And the truth is that the world is amazing and extravagant and glorious and delightful. And we ought to show our children how to delight in the good things of God. And this means gratitude for specific gifts, but also just gratitude for the goodness of creation itself. And that's entirely in keeping with what the implications of the incarnation are, that matter matters, that stuff is good, that that chocolate chip cookies and caramel corn and apple cider and et cetera, are good and for our enjoyment. And we have to be, I think we ought to be over the top in displaying that joy and gratitude before our children. Yeah. And that works into the next one, which is that's hard work, actually. Like, it's tiring. And to enjoy things is difficult. It wears us out. And that's not wrong. So Christmas is exhausting. That's not wrong. That's not necessarily a sign that you're doing it wrong. I don't know. Maybe my example there would be, you remember when you were young, like you're 9 and you could just run forever and you could just play capture the flag to no end. And like the sun goes down, who cares? Like, let's keep on going. And now as I'm a dad and I watch my kids and yeah, they can just run forever, it seems like, and they can enjoy in a way that I feel too weak to enjoy, right? And I don't know, maybe that's not a perfect comparison, but I like it because it reminds me that it takes strength and vitality to enjoy things. And to enjoy something doesn't necessarily fill you back up and charge your batteries. Actually, it can drain you, but that's right and good. And Christmas is like that. So, you know, come Epiphany on January 6th, you're going to be tired of Christmas. And that's because you're weak. But I mean that truly. Like, it is. Like, we are weak. We are not as we once were, and we're not as we will be. We have to grow up into the image of God. And so someday we'll be able to rest and to enjoy the good gifts of God more fully and abundantly. And now we're shallow and we're weak. So we have to prepare. So celebration is hard work. We should plan accordingly. We should prepare ourselves for it accordingly.
One of the ways that we can do that, I think, is just by recognizing what this time is for and setting aside in our hearts and minds beforehand that this is what I'm going to do with this time. I'm going to celebrate. And it might be exhausting. You know, you talking about the running metaphor just made me think of Ecclesiastes, that Solomon says, with much wisdom comes much vexation. And so that, yeah, in some sense, it's also true that it's harder for us to celebrate in this stage of life because we know a lot more about the world and it demands a lot more of us than it does of our kids. We have a lot of responsibilities and stresses and anxieties and fears that they don't have. And that's a freeing thing for them and it's a good thing for them. And yet that doesn't get us off the hook for celebrating the good things that God has given. In fact, really, it should motivate us all the more to celebrate the good things that he's given because we know the darkness. We know the sin and the sorrow and the pain and the suffering. And we can show our kids that despite all of that, that they will learn one day through their own lives, God's good gifts are still worth celebrating. And it might take it out of you. Or, you know, for instance, you might get bad news in the middle of a Christmas celebration and it's really gut-wrenching and painful. That's okay. You know, that's part of life. But teaching your kids that despite all of the sadness and the grief and the frustration throughout life, whenever it comes, whether it's Christmas morning or the middle of July, you know, we still celebrate the goodness of God as is appropriate. And this is an appropriate time to do it. It's just so, so important. And yeah, it can be hard. It just can. It takes a lot out of us, but it's a good thing. Again, you're shaping their world. You're teaching them what it looks like to respond to God. Because something you alluded to, you know, last week with the hymns, they don't know these hymns. You know them. You skip over the lines, but they don't know them. They're learning them for the first time. They don't know Christmas. You're teaching them Christmas for the first time, right? They've never been an 8-year-old at Christmas. They've been a 7-year-old maybe, but they haven't been an 8-year-old. And that's different. It is. So you're teaching them those things, and you've not only been an 8-year-old at Christmas, you've watched other 8-year-olds at Christmas in some way, shape, or form, right? You know, not to stretch it too far, but you watch other people who are younger than you go through these stages, and you've also gone through them yourself. And that's part of parenting, right? You're passing on these lessons and teaching them wisdom and how to walk faithfully. But it's like you've said before, I can't remember which episode. Like in some sense, everything for our kids is always new. They live in a constant world of change, and it's our task to bring them stability. And so that looks like oftentimes helping them navigate whatever season you're in, like literally the season, Christmas season, okay, but also stage of life. Like, are you 4? Are you 16? You know, that sort of thing. You're helping them walk through and learn what life is like. And so, yeah, you're trying to tie that idea back into what you said earlier, which is that this celebration is the point of our lives. It is the end, right? It's the purpose, which is to celebrate and enjoy God and his good gifts.
And not to be misunderstood, it's not like this Christmas 2025 is the point of everything, but it's like, no, this is a end-like thing. It is of the same substance as the end. The end of all things is, you know, the eternal rest of God, right? Forever and ever and ever. But a little bit of that is sticking back into our world now. And we taste it and we experience it now. And so it's a foretaste. So saying that it's the point of everything can be misunderstood. But this is of the same substance as the thing that is the point of everything. Maybe is a more complicated way of saying it. So what this means, nitty-gritty, ticky-tacky, is there's a lot of logistics that you're going to have to take care of. And we're getting to the stage of life that a lot of the things our parents did, it's now our job to do. And that can be mitigated somewhat if you spend Christmas with extended family, which is right and good. I still think it's important to also establish one's own nuclear household. And part of the reason for that is so that we're forced to take responsibility, right? So we don't lean on grandma for everything. And because it's good for us to have to do that. So, you know, a lot of the things that your parents did, maybe they can't do anymore, or maybe it's just your turn, or maybe you're not going to be with them this year because they're with the other relatives in Maine or whatever. And so that means that a lot of those logistical things What do we eat? When do we eat it? When do we open the presents? What else are we going to do? How many presents are we going to open? Do we open them all at once? Do we stretch it out? Why? What do we drink? When do we go sledding? You know, how do we spend this time? It's a lot of time, right? How are we going to divvy it up? Remembering your children's frames. Are we going to still have nap time? Are we going to not have nap time? Are we going to watch a movie? Are we going to read books? What are we going to do? Are we going to do the same things with everybody? Are we going to have some of the kids do one thing and some of the kids do another? What's mom doing? Does mom just get worked to the bone all stinking season, right? Or do you, can you figure out a way to give mom rest, right? One thing something I'm aspiring to this year, Jameson, and you hold me to this. I'm doing more in the kitchen this year.
All right.
So be it. Because
now, can we quantify that? Because I got to hold you to it.
No.
I got to know what you mean.
Literally anything more would be an improvement.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I just want the totality of the burden to not fall upon my wife. If I can help in any way. No, I'll have more concrete things to say so you can actually hold me accountable. But I think that's, like, I joke about that, but no, it's actually true. Like, my wife does a ton of cooking and she likes to cook, but it's a lot. And if I'm casting this vision, right, for this festival that ought to be a foretaste of the glory of God to all eternity now for our children and our household, but I'm not willing to actually, like, get my hands dirty in the kitchen, well, that's just not fitting. It's just not what God did. Embracing the fact that this whole thing is a ton of work, but it's not the same work as we do in our normal 9-to-5. It's a different sort of work. And so it ought to be treated as a different sort of work. It ought to be treated with joy and delight and gratitude. And again, not for the sake of sentimentality, not for the sake of how it makes me feel. That's not the point. But I should roll up my sleeves and get to work. And if I'm totally exhausted and secretly looking forward to a nice quiet day at the office, right, when it's all over, like, that's not a sign that you failed. It's probably a sign that you succeeded.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the key is just recognizing that there are always things to do. There are always things that you can participate in to be a help, whether that's to your wife and it's just the two of you at home with your kids, or whether that's to your parents or your in-laws, whatever it is, right? There are so many ways that you can take on responsibility, take on a burden, and help in that way and make sacrifices to be like the sun shining down on your kids. And in fact, this is something that I've thought about a little bit, but when you're with family, if you're with, you know, your siblings or your in-laws and your kids are with cousins, what are ways that you can shine light on them as well and be a blessing to your cousins, right? Your kids' cousins. And, like, is there something that you can do with all of them together? And you take the burden, you take the lead and the logistical kind of hurdles on yourself and make it happen, right? You know, this is an example not with kids, but we just went to Megan's family for Thanksgiving for part of the week, and her brother organized a whole pool tournament for everybody, and it was a lot of fun. Like, everybody played. He set up this double elimination bracket in his room, and he kind of assigned the pairs and everything, and Fiona, the youngest, she was pinch hitting for somebody that couldn't be there for the tournament, and she got into the championship and almost won the whole thing. So, you know, it creates this memory. It creates this fun thing. And sure, we could have been sitting around all day just talking or reading books or, you know, playing outside with the young kids. That's fine. But that was a special thing that we'll always remember. And, like, oh, you remember when Fiona almost beat Riley for the pool tournament and she wasn't even planning on playing and doesn't really play pool. You know, like, those kinds of things happen because somebody organizes them and brings it all together. And so just looking for opportunities like that to serve and to love and to shine a light on people and bless them with the goodness of God.
Yeah, that's right. So little bits of initiative go a long way. Little bits of creativity. And kind of like we talked about last time, just try things. You never know. You know, be creative. Be, you know, it's okay to be eccentric. It's okay to try something and go, yep, that was a flop. Not doing that again. And it's funny, if you cannot take yourself too seriously, that becomes a memory too. Like, remember when we all wore those silly hats? That was silly. Shouldn't have done that. Or, you know, that didn't catch on. Or, you know, remember when we tried to do the limerick writing contest and boy, that flopped. It's actually, I think limerick writing contests are great. So that was a bad example. So again, God made a world full of unexpected things and delightful things and strange things, right? He invented seahorses, right? It doesn't get weirder than that. And so that's the world God made. He invites us to do creative things with it. So think outside the box. We have liberty to delight our children. It just takes work. It takes thought. It takes attention. But now's the time to be thinking about it, right? You still have time, a little bit of time. And maybe I'll kind of wrap up with this. I'm becoming a big proponent of reclaiming Christmastide, like as a season. So we've alluded and kind of joked about the 12 days. But that's a thing. And it's hard to do if you let Christmas dominate all of Advent, if you didn't let Advent be its own time. So it takes self-discipline to keep Advent Advent and keep Christmas Christmas. But if you can, it's really wonderful. And it actually just makes for more better celebration, because you've got all this built-up expectation, and then it's not over on December 26th, right? Some people put away their Christmas decorations on like the 27th, and it hurts my heart. But no, let it be. Like, let it just sort of, I don't know, languish is the wrong word, luxuriate. My children have started saying luxuriate, by the way, as a verb, and I think it's pretty great. Don't rush. You have this structure built into the Christian tradition of taking 12 days. And that is extravagant, by the way. And I am not going to lie to you. I tapped out on day 8 last year and I said, I can't handle any more days of Christmas. Like, it's too much. I'm going for 9. That's my goal this year. I'm going for 9 days of Christmas. We're going to build up a day every year. And maybe someday we'll have a 12th night celebration sort of thing to cap it off. Let it take its time. Plan accordingly. You know, stretch before you exercise, but enjoy it to the full.
I'm just curious, just practically speaking, what does it look like as you guys have tried, you know, 8 days of Christmas last year, going for 9 this year? Because we live in a culture where that's just not a thing. And even though it's paired in some sense with New Year's Day, a lot of times you have people going back to work between those two and then getting more time off for New Year's Day. Also worth noting, like, these 12 days were celebrated in a time where people didn't really get vacation time like we do. Like, it's a pretty standard norm to get 2 or 3 weeks of vacation at any job in America. And, you know, that's just not been the norm for history. So you might think, like, oh, that's so little time. Am I going to spend it all at Christmas? Like, maybe so, right? There's nothing wrong with that. But what does it look like, practically speaking, in a world? Because I'm very invested in reclaiming Christmastide as well, because I think it's important. Just our Christian heritage has passed this on to us. Let's not just throw it away. Let's try to recover any semblance of it we can. But what do you guys do? Like, I assume presents Christmas morning on the 25th, pretty normal fare there, probably a meal at some point. But what does it look like continuing that on?
Yeah. Something we inherited from my parents is taking an extraordinarily long time to open presents. So there was one year where we still were opening presents on New Year's. Just because there were a lot of us. Turns out there were a lot of presents. We took our time. So that's part of it, actually, not opening all the presents first day. You know, we open, you know, presents from so-and-so on this day and presents from so-and-so on this day. So that's one thing. Stretching out the opening of gifts, I think, is great. And it also gives the children a chance to breathe. We also are, and I'm still playing with some of these things, but I really like the traditions that make a big deal of Christmas Eve, which I think also plays well with the Advent as anticipation. Like, you just can't wait to start. Like, you get back from the Christmas Eve service, and it's Christmas, guys. Let's go big. We're still playing out how that works. I think, again, practical, nitty-gritty, having one meal or event that is festive each day, I think is a good baseline. And that's doable even if you go back to work, right? It doesn't have to mean we're still lying around in our pajamas on day 7. Like, no, we can go back to work on day 7. That's fine. But you can still be celebratory. You can still be in a festive mode even if you went back to work. This could look like, and again, I'm still thinking about what it will look like this year. All the situations are different. But it could mean you say, we're going to get together with so-and-so on this day of Christmas. We're going to have so-and-so over on that day of Christmas. You know, day 8 is going to be the sledding party, Lord willing, if the crick don't rise, right? And if it's not, then it's going to be a muddy hike, right? And won't that be fun? And we'll pray for snow next year. It doesn't have to be all day. I find that one meal or one event that is festive suits it well.
Yeah, I think those are all great ideas. And there are things that a lot of times we do anyway, just in a less formal, and I say formal, really what I mean is less formative way, in a way that doesn't have so much meaning. Because if you're with family for 3 or 4 days, either they're with you out of town or you're going to see parents or something, you're going to be doing things together. You're going to have meals together. You know, I talked about how at Thanksgiving and maybe particularly at Christmas, my mom's cooking like every night these wonderful meals building up to the meal. And so that kind of thing happens. Like, you go and do stuff with your kids when you're with family, hopefully. So just make a plan out of it. This is something, I part of maybe traveling and the discipline on the go stuff put me in mind to think about ways that I could get our family having some dedicated family time when we were there for Thanksgiving, because we were gone for a week. And one of the things I did was just, okay, let's look for state parks. And here's one that I grew up coming to Gadsden and never knew was here. And I've been to the Gadsden Mall to see movies I don't know how many times as a kid. And right across the parking lot, there's a boardwalk to a state park on a lake where birds live, and it's like a bird sanctuary. And so there are all sorts of herons and ducks and geese and crazy number of birds that we could watch on this pier. And we just took the boys and Rosemary out and walked down the pier. And, there were the big cattail things with the poofy, flowery stuff at the top. I broke those off, and they had spears, and they were running up and down the boardwalk with these spears. And it was a blast. And then Megan and I later that day went on a date and went to see a movie, just the two of us. And my parents kept the kids, and it was awesome. So just planning things like that and thinking, it doesn't even have to cost money. What are some free things that we can get out and do in whatever town we're in? Can we go to the Bluebell Factory? Can we go to the state park? Can we go wherever, and enjoy it and make it. I think the key there is, because we do those sorts of things, consecrating those things and saying, this is our celebration of Christmas day 3, right? We're going to go and get ice cream from the Bluebell Factory or whatever it is. So anyway, I love that idea of keeping it, simple in some respect. Like, you're not trying to do the whole Christmas day every day, but also, you're looking for some special moments, events, meals, things like that. That's great. That's the present thing is also something that I want to maybe lean a little bit more into, because I mentioned last week my whole idea of like the gift that you don't know when you're going to get it. You have to keep, rolling the die or whatever in anticipation. So I'll maybe think of a way to do that and see if I can try it out this year. And that fits kind of hand in glove, I think, with the idea of spreading some of the presents out anyway. And like, there's a plan for some of these presents. And then there's like a big present or a special present in some way, and we don't know when it's coming. It could be anytime. That's fun. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's so much more we could do and say. This doesn't scratch the surface, but hopefully it's helpful to be thinking, okay, I'm the dad. What should I be trying to be? Who am I? What ought I to be leading my family in? What should my mindset be in doing this Christmas thing? And so if you know, in one phrase, sacrificial joy, like that should be your mindset. Sacrificial joy, giving of myself to the glory of my God and the good of my people.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for today. So what's your book recommendation for us this week?
Oh, my book recommendation today has nothing to do with Christmas, but has a lot to do with joy. And that is Leave It to Smith by P.G. Wodehouse. You'll be confused because the Smith has a P at the beginning of it. I mispronounced that for many years, just like the characters in the book mispronounce it. But Leave It to Smith is a Wodehouse at his finest. You will not be sorry. It's just utterly delightful. If you want to cultivate joy in the good things of God, then you can do far worse than reading Leave It to Smith by P.G. Wodehouse.
That's great. And mine is actually a book that I recommended, or I didn't recommend, but I mentioned last week, which is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel by Jonathan Gibson. This is a book of liturgies built around the Advent and Christmas season, and maybe Epiphany. I can't remember if Epiphany's in there at the end, but it's a great way if you're looking for some structure and some guidance in either celebrating Advent or Christmastide. You know, he's got the 12 days of Christmas in there and some traditional readings from Scripture, traditional prayers, hymns, things like that that go with those moments. And it's very easy to walk through, and you don't have to read the whole thing with your family. I mean, frankly, I don't see a world where I do that in the next 10 years because it's like 10 pages of liturgy for one day. And so I'm just picking and choosing things along the way, right? And it's been a great joy for us and very helpful in seeking, like we've been talking about, to consecrate this time and make it very special and meaningful and to help our kids particularly focus in on what it is that we're doing by celebrating Christmas. So O Come, O Come, Emmanuel by Jonathan Gibson. And with that, we hope that you've enjoyed the show, and we thank you for joining us and listening in. If you would like to support the show and help us keep producing it long term, we would love to have your support at Patreon. Even just a few dollars a month will go a long way in helping us keep costs down. So you can see a link to our Patreon in the description below. We also want to say thank you to Shane Caver for the use of our theme music, and ETC Media for their help editing the podcast. So big shout out to both of those, and we commend them to you as faithful Christian brothers and the work that they're doing. And with that, we hope you've been blessed and edified by the show.
Don't be hasty.
Death celebration.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Got it. That's
You're
it.
Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah.